The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Well, last week we were reading about a town in Michigan for the nicest places in America, which is the theme for this month's program. This month's magazine. So we did the first one, which was the place in Michigan that got the absolute Gaithersburg, Michigan, which won the prize as best place. But there's several other runner-ups, too. And this one is Rio Vista, California, Walking the Walk by Bill Hangley, Jr. And there's a picture of a whole bunch of people kneeling with masks on in front of a place that looks like probably a school of some sort. There's flags out in front of it, might even say City Hall, including a very pretty American flag waving in the wind. And that they're apparently, they walk a walk for a lot of things. There are movements, and there are grassroots movements. And then there are blade of grass movements. Richard Lynn is that blade of grass, one man popping up out of the dirt at the edge of California's Central Valley, hoping to make his town and the world a better place. Lynn, 57, is a union electrician. He lives in a house in development in Rio Vista, population 8,200. Half the town is a cluster of homes and businesses built by the Sacramento River. The other half is the Trilogy subdivision. Lynn's over 55 gated community, Trilogy, draws modestly prosperous retirees and older workers like Lynn, promising a peaceful, pleasant place to wind down a hard-working life. There's a golf course, there's a park and a senior center. But for Lynn, there's also the shadow of menace. He is African-American. The vast majority of his neighbors and elected officials are white. Usually people get along, he says, but things can get ugly. Like the time in 2019 when local police were caught on video body-slamming a black woman following a traffic stop. This was one of several civil rights controversies that led Rio Vista to disband its police department last January. Now Solano County Sheriff's deputies patrol the town. When Lynn moved to Trilogy in 2018, one of a handful of minorities, he tried not to worry about the neighbors who didn't seem to want to say hello. He enjoyed the palm trees and lived his life. He often took a walk or a jog at night. But when the 1-2 combo of the COVID-19 quarantine and the George Floyd protest hit, Lynn realized he felt afraid to leave his house. He was afraid to take his nightly jaunts. In addition to worrying about the virus, the news stirred up even deeper fear. What if someone calls a cop thinking he's a burglar? And what if the responding officer has an itchy trigger finger? That was the first time as an adult male that I felt unsafe, says Lynn. That night, instead of going out to jog, he sat down to write a Nextdoor.com post. And there's a picture here of a young lady. I assume it's a young lady. This is a guy with a ponytail. He's just in the back. Riding a bicycle says, "Death to racism, Black Lives Matter." "I can't go for a walk because I'm black. Can't go for a drive because I am black," Lynn wrote. "Can't get angry because I am black. I am home and I am crying. What can I do?" Little did he know that he'd already done it. His neighbor saw his post. They felt his pain. He wasn't the only blade of grass in town. Officers poured into Joan Lynn for a walk. They didn't say, "He's crazy," he recalls. They said, "Let's support him." Soon, dozens of neighbors joined Lynn for twice-daily walks to Trilogy that continued to this day, morning and evening, at 7:25, marking the time of Floyd's death, 7:25 a.m. Pacific time. As part of each walk, the group takes a knee for amount of time it took Floyd to die beneath an officer's knee, to reflect on past victims of injustice and imagine a future when Americans see one another as people, not racial stereotypes. "This is a solidarity walk, not a walk of anger. This is a walk of celebration," Lynn says. "It's a celebration of the beginning of the death of racism." His neighbor Jean Brown says the response to Lynn's post registered her faith and restored her faith in humanity. At one of the first walks, 75 people showed up, resolves, including the fire department chief. Not everybody in town supports Lynn. Passing drivers sometimes yell, "All lives matter," says Lynn friends Tom Watson. And I say, all lives will matter when black lives matter. Now, on a typical day, a dozen or more people show up. Whether these walks can change the world, Lynn can't say. At first, all he wanted was to get something off his chest. But he feels energized. He's even running for mayor. "Win or lose," he says, steps out the door to walk. "There's an hour a day when I'm a race-free society," he says. When in life do you have that opportunity? And once again, I'll mention the picture because there's a picture of about, I guess, probably 40 or 50 people standing there beside him as they kneel in honor of George Floyd. Gaithersburg, Maryland, Kid Power. And there's a picture of an older woman, a young, looks like an Oriental woman, and her child looks like he's probably about 4 or 5. When Denise Cherry needed help, Christy and Ethan Cheong showed up. At COVID cases raised in April, Denise Cherry was afraid to leave her home. She had lost 3 family members to the virus, and with medical problems of her own, she wasn't taking any chances. Desperate, Cherry, 65, responded to a Nextdoor.com post from a treasurer offering help. That stranger was Christy Cheong, who lived in a few neighborhoods away in Gaithersburg, a hardworking but increasingly ticky city of 70,000. She came the next day with her 4-year-old son, called that one, didn't I, Ethan. They took out Cherry's trash and brought in her mail, and they kept coming until she was well enough to do for herself. On our street, we have a few elders, so we're the eyes and ears for them, fixing doors and computers, mowing their lawns, says Cheong, 32. We said there's a grandma that needs help, and Ethan was excited. I'm going to help. I'm going to be a helper. Gaithersburg is a notably young and diverse community, so it's no surprise that the city's youth are leading the way. In April, 7-year-old Kavanaugh Bell spent his life savings, $600, to make care packages for his grandmother's friends. He calls himself the city's chief positivity creator. Area teens are helping their elders, too, volunteering for Teens Helping Seniors, a grocery delivery service created by high school pals DeRuth Pye and Matt Castronato. For Cherry, who grew up in North Carolina during Jim Crow, young people offer hope. We're taught if you can't change something, accept it, she says. But these young people, their attitude, I'm going to change what I can't accept. Pawleys Island, South Carolina, showing their gratitude. And there's a picture of 5, obviously, healthcare workers, at least 4 healthcare workers and maybe an administrator. For Tideland's healthcare workers, heartfelt thanks go back to card makers. And they're all holding up signs, thank you. Some cards are in a child's scrawl, complete with stickers. You are a blessing, love, Braylon. Others are written in flowering penmanship. We want you to know just how much we appreciate all your hard work and dedication to such a difficult job. We lift you up in prayer each day to keep you safe through this horrible virus. We are also very proud of everything you do, love, Betty McCulley. All of them, 1,861 thank you notes in total, have one thing in common. They were written from the heart by people of Pawleys Island, South Carolina, to healthcare professionals working around the clock during the scariest days of the COVID-19 pandemic. There's a lot of love in those cards, says Jim Coggan, a leader of the Pawleys Island Community Church. When he organized the card drive 7 months ago, Coggan already knew that local residents appreciated the employees of Tideland's Health, a medical group that staffs 4 hospitals in the area. He set a basket outside the church to collect the notes and had ambitiously expected to receive 800 cards. Within just days, the basket was beyond full. It was overwhelming, says Amy Stevens, Tideland's vice president, after Coggins and a few others dropped off the cards. I just sat in my office and cried looking at the cards. I really did. The church members are some of the 100 or so year-round residents of Pawleys Island, a barrier island about 25 miles south of Myrtle Beach. It's in spots, the charming sliver of land is just one house wide. In the summer, some 5,500 tourists arrive. But this past July, the population surge resulted in a 1,700% increase in patients hospitalized with COVID-19. First responders of all types were overwhelmed. So the church stepped up to help once again. They reached into their coffers and had lunches delivered to the local hospitals, as well as to the police, the fire department, and the local Coast Guard station. We want to serve those who serve us, Pastor Don Williams, whose parishioners kept the meals and the prayers coming for weeks. Around the time of those acts of mercy, anger over the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police officers erupted. Georgetown County Sheriff Carter Weaver, whose jurisdiction includes Pawleys Island, decided to write a note denouncing the police officer's action. He shared it with his staff, then posted it on Facebook. I will not sit back and remain silent, it began. Shortly after that, Weaver got a call from Eileen Carter, a sophomore at Waccamaw High School on Pawleys Island. Carter, 15, had gone to a racial justice march in Myrtle Beach and was inspired to bring the movement home. She wanted to organize a peaceful protest. I think it's important for people to speak about things in a peaceful way, Carter explained. Weaver agreed. She put out a call to march on social media, and approximately 100 people answered her. They walked about a mile from the Dollar General to the Speedway convenience store and back, while carrying signs of support and protest. One of those who marched was Sheriff Weaver. "You couldn't help but want to be part of what she was doing," he says. The active partnership with the police and the people of Pawleys Island didn't end that day. A planned youth advisory board will offer people like Carter a forum to speak up. The county's Citizen Use of Force review panel will look at the files, body and car camera footage, statements, and other recorded evidence any time officers use force in the line of duty. "I think it's important for transparency," says Weaver. "My biggest stance is that law enforcement talks too much. We just do, and we don't listen. And that's what we have been trying since this happened." Eileen was a huge kickstarter in that process. Redhead and Tattoo in Shreveport, Louisiana. Under One Roof by Carolyn Fanning and Jeremy Greenfield. And there's a picture of a young man. He has a mohawk. Behind him is a statue of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. He's got, of course, multiple tattoos, since he is a tattoo artist. All up his arms, full sleeves, crossed his chest. Don't see any on his head, so I guess he's kind of scraped there. Micah Harold in the tattoo shop he turned into an ad hoc community center. In January, 20-year-old Joshua Jefferson held up the red-handed tattoo at gunpoint, took $300, and escaped through a window. When his trial began, Micah Harold, the shop's owner, was quick to testify. In Jefferson's defense, "I want leniency, Harold, who had also attended Jefferson's arraignment, said at the time. I'd give him a job if he wanted. That's the kind of humanity you'll find in Harold and in Shreveport, the city that's home to the red-handed tattoo. Call it compassion that's restless, relentless beyond reason. Another example, Harold closed his shop in March, more than a week before Louisiana mandated the closure of non-essential businesses. Why short himself the revenue? Because he was worried that Shreveport wasn't ready for a spike in COVID cases, and he thought it could help. He started by giving away rubber gloves and rubbing alcohol to anyone who needed them. Within days, he had transformed red-handed into a kind of general store. Shelves that once held needles and ink were now stocked with groceries and toilet paper. My tattoo shop looked like a Circle K, Harold jokes, referring to the chain of convenience stores. More remarkable, every item was on sale for the remarkable price of free. 99. Harold, 45, wouldn't accept a dime. You see the world differently in desperate times. You start asking, is this person loving or hateful, draining or inspiring? That's how I've been able to break down the world in light of the pandemic. Everything else falls to the side, he says. Tucked into a robin's egg blue building that flies a red pirate flag on its roof, Red-Headed Tattoo is a warm place that's notable for the friendly faces inside as it is for the motorcycles in the parking lot. It's located in an artsy area along busy Kings Highway, so friends and clients have long stopped by at all hours just to say hi. Once the pandemic struck, folks still dropped in, only now they brought donations of masks, hand sanitizer, and anything they could spare from grocery runs. Restaurants called to offer food they'd no longer be able to serve. A manager at the Family Dollar agreed to set aside a portion of the most in-demand products as soon as they came off the truck. Nearly $10,000 of cash and supplies flowed to Harold's shop, and from there to where they were needed most. A network of 20 volunteers organized to provide contactless delivery to residents who had trouble getting around. Soon, even healthcare workers at the nearby Willis-Knighton Hospital knew where to get personal protective equipment or a thermometer when supplies dwindled. This pandemic has exposed decades of old economic and health disparities, says Shreveport Mayor Adrian Parkins. Shreveport is full of hardworking people who go about above and beyond for their neighbors. Micah exemplifies that selfless spirit. You might say that Harold was born into helping. His mother, Deborah Allen, is a longtime equal rights activist. As a social worker, she was deeply involved with the AIDS pandemic in the 80s, while Harold was growing up. Almost 40 years later, when Shreveport badly needed masks to help combat COVID-19, Harold's first call was to his mom. She's also a former fashion designer, and he says the best seamstress in town. Shreveport is a sprawling city of 190,000, nestled in the northwest corner of Louisiana. No stranger to the regular storms that batter the Gulf, residents often sense when one is coming and prepare quietly, and not only for those bringing bad weather. Like so many working-class cities, Shreveport has had its share of struggles. One of the most recent came on April 6 when a 44-year-old black man named Tommy McLaughlin, Jr., died in Shreveport police custody after being detained on suspicion of breaking into a car. The anger started as a slow boil. Every Saturday was like a barometer, says Will James, 42, a community activist and performance artist. You knew a storm was coming, and you could smell the rain in the air. After the May 25th of George Floyd, the commitment to protesting racism and McLaughlin's death only grew. On June 1st, Oman Hosong, 30, a civil rights activist, launched a movement called the 45 Days of Action. The idea was to hold an event, talks, marches, voters' registration drives every day for 45 days, each with the goal of improving life in the city and beyond. On June 4th, hundreds of people joined a Justice for Tommy march downtown. We provided the PPE and masks, making sure that people stayed socially distant so we could get our message out without increasing COVID-19 numbers, says Hosang. The march was peaceful, but things heated up later that month. Outside the Caddo Parish Courthouse, that's home of a 30-foot monument built in 1905 by the United Daughters of the Confederacy to honor the men who gallantly, nobly, and conscientiously defended the cause. It features busts of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and other Confederate soldiers. And there's a picture here of Will James, an African-American man, good-looking guy, bald head, shaved head, like a lot of African-American men do, protested outside the Caddo Parish Courthouse below for 3 years. These days, he's grateful for the added support, and there's a picture of the Caddo Parish Courthouse. James, a Shreveport native, who remembers the bad old days when robed Ku Klux Klan members freely marched through the streets, has long seen the problem posed by Confederate tribute, and he has spent the past 3 years fighting to remove it. I can appreciate this as a piece of art, but there's a right place for everything, James told Shreveport Times. This monument shouldn't be in front of a place where the 14th Amendment says that we all have equal justice for all. In the early days, James protested alone, delivering theatrical monologues highlighting the pain that discrimination can bring. But as the monument protests gained currency across the country, so did those in Shreveport. Hundreds of people began regularly showing up to watch James and support his message. On June 27th, with little warning or provocation, 140 counter-protests massed across the street from James's usual spot, brandishing guns and shouting hateful words. James stayed on the mic for hours that day, telling the gathered to keep faith until his voice gave out. Others then took turns speaking, and the crowd became so engrossed in one another's shared hopes and fears that they just turned out the shouts from the opposition. Finally, the counter-protesters left and never came back. It turned into a moment that brought unity when there was anger in an hour before. It shows how deep at heart we all really want peace, said James. A few weeks later, on July 20th, the United Daughters of the Confederacy agreed to remove the monument to an yet undecided location. How has Shreveport been able to effect real change with minimal arrest, violence, and property damage? Credit goes to the citizens, says Police Chief Ben Raymond. They didn't want to destroy their city. They just wanted to be heard. Not surprisingly, Micah Harold lent a helping hand to the protesters, too. Stacy Archibald, a nurse friend who staffed the medical tent at the first Black Lives Matter march following George Floyd's death, says that rags dunked in ice water, all donated by Red Handed Tattoo, were essential in keeping member snatchers cool. In the days since the protest, Harold has kept his marketplace of caring up and running, though he has also gone back to his first love, making designs on people who want to express themselves in their own way. The tattoo shop has an extended family he has found there. Both in his staff and customers, have provided Harold with some of the most important connections in his life. One of the most surprising was with the family of Joshua Jefferson, the young man who robbed his store. Throughout the summer, Harold called the Jeffersons every week, sometimes he even dropped by with groceries. Then, on August 3rd, the district court judge, in an unexpected display of leniency, sentenced Joshua to 3 years of probation, no jail time. As soon as he heard, Harold called Joshua's father, Marvin Jefferson. I honestly believe Joshua won't squander this opportunity, says Harold. He made a huge mistake, and he's learned from it. Harold, who survived a near-fatal window maker heart attack last year, is a big believer in second chances. That job he offered Joshua? It's his when he wants it. Fear keeps people from making the right moves. They worry about looking like a fool, he says. I don't worry anymore. We all need to make the world a nicer place. And there's a kind of the closing out to this. The nicest place by the numbers. There were 1,183 total nominations were made in responses to our call for entries in May. 229 places landed on our short list and were vetted by our team reporters. 50 nicest places in each state earned our honors. claps were received 666,933 claps were received on ourreadersdigest.com from Americans supporting their favorites among the 50 state borders. To select our nicest places in America, RD editors counted the claps for each place, polled our advisory members, and then made this year's picks: Buchanan, Michigan; Yardley, Pennsylvania; Victory Gardens. And there's two young ladies bumping elbows here, both of them wearing masks, one of them in a blue shirt, one of them in a plaid shirt, one blonde, one with streaked blonde hair. Parishioners at St. Andrews have found new ways to stay connected. Yardley has a long history as a community that cares. Back in the days of the Underground Railroad, at least five places in this Delaware River town housed runaway slaves. For the past four decades, a good portion of the altruism has been centered at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, whose members meet in the 19th-century parish house every month to fix meals for elderly and shut-in residents across the Philadelphia region. Barbara Taffner Culp enjoyed this generosity twice. When I broke both my legs, St. Andrew's fed my husband and myself in such abundance that with great thanks I had to say stop, she says. My husband, jokingly I hope, asked me to break my legs every month afterwards because he loved the food. When he passed away, the cards and calls were unending, Culp says. They helped her know she was never alone. The coronavirus ended the congregation's proud 37-year streak of making meals together, but it didn't break their spirit of giving. Far from it. Instead, church members took to cooking in their houses. Soon, volunteers were serving up 1,000 meals and 400 containers of soup each week, almost 10 times more food than before the pandemic. And many ingredients in those meals were homegrown. In the spring, St. Andrew's provided seedlings, tomatoes, beans, basil, and more to Yardley residents to plant at home. The gardeners then brought their bounty back to the church to share with area food banks. 40% of Americans' produce in World War II came from Victory Gardens and backyards and at churches. I don't know about you folks, but my parents had one of those, says St. Andrew's rector, Reverend Hillier Agree. I thought, what if we did that here? To which the people of Yardley said, amen. I lived across from a schoolyard, and which at that time was not a schoolyard. It was just a big open field. The school was built to take care of the baby boomers in the late 40s. But my parents and all her neighbors had about a 100-foot square victory garden that they grew the vegetables and food for it. The nicest place in every other state. To read the stirring stories of our honorees, click around the interactive map at rd.com/nicest2020. Alabama, Owens Crossroad; Alaska, Anchorage; Arizona, East Gershon Lane, Tucson; Arkansas, Sardis; Colorado, Strogolova Foundation in Denver; Connecticut, Bloomfield; Delaware, Edgemore Terrace in Wilmington; Florida, Pine Hills; Georgia, the Dream Center, Augusta; Hawaii, Kamalokia Valley; Oahu; Idaho, Meridian; Illinois, Collinsville; Indiana, Doorsteps of Central Indiana; Iowa, Iowa City; Kansas, Olathe; Kentucky, Signature Healthcare Nursing Facility, Elizabethtown; Maine, The Cedars, Portland; Massachusetts, Springfield; Minnesota, Victoria's Ristorante and Wine Bar, Rochester; Mississippi, Florence Gardens, Gulfport; Missouri, Thousand Oaks, Parkville; Montana, Ronan, that's R-O-N-A-N; Nebraska, South 32nd Place, Lincoln; Nevada, Sparks; New Hampshire, Temple; New Jersey, Jefferson Washington Township Hospital in Turnersville; New Mexico, Buena Toa Todas Farm, Villanueva; New York, Riverdale; North Carolina, Dirk Bard Ales Brewery and Hope Mills. Well, that's not very far from here. North Dakota, Minot. Why not Minot? By the little aside, Minot is way out in the middle of nowhere. It was so lonely for people who were stationed at the Air Force Station at Minot that they were the only people I ever knew who volunteered to go to Vietnam instead of staying in Minot. It's very cold there in the winter, too. Nice town, though. Ohio, Clintonville and Columbus. Oklahoma, Colfax Hills, Tulsa. Oregon, Hillsboro. Rhode Island, Belmont Market and Wakefield. South Dakota, Iroquois School District. Tennessee, Nashville. Texas, Highland Village. Utah, backyards of Saratoga Springs. Vermont, telehealth access for seniors in Barre, Vermont. Virginia, virtual tip jar at Hampton Roads. Washington, Belden Cafe, Bellevue. West Virginia, Huntington. Wisconsin, Sassacow Creamery in Columbus. And Wyoming, Casper. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. And we're switching just a couple minutes early because we have a couple of long articles. I'm going to finish off what we started last week, which is how pesticides affect us and our food and how they do on veggies. But pesticides also affect farm workers. Pesticides pose special dangers to people who work with them on farms and in factories, as well as their families and people who live nearby. A long-running project from the University of California, Berkeley, known as the Chama Coast Study, is a key source of evidence. The name is an acronym for the Center for Health Assessment of Mothers and Children of Salinas and means little children in Mexican Spanish. Starting in 1999, researchers began following hundreds of Latino children, many from before they were even born in Salinas, California, an area where much of the U.S. produce is grown. The findings show that pesticide exposure in pregnant women and during childhood is linked to poor reflexes in infants, a sign of brain and nervous system problems, lower IQ, attention disorders, poor lung function, and more people facing greater economic and social challenges are also more likely to suffer harm from pesticide exposure, says Brendan Eskenazi, Ph.D., the study's director. The effects of pesticides on the people who grow and harvest our food is a big part of the reason CR recommends buying organic when you can, says Charlotte Vise, CR senior policy analyst. How much does organic really cost? Not as you might think, and there are ways to save. Buying organic produce not only your health, but also the health of farm workers and the environment. But higher costs can be a major barrier. To see just how great the price difference between organic and non-organic are, CR analyzed the USDA's weekly advertised fruit and vegetable retail price report, which collects prices from more than 29,000 grocery stores in the U.S. We focused on the 14 non-organic fresh fruits and vegetables CR rated fair or poor for pesticides, and the ones for which buying organic is most important except spinach, because organic spinach rated poor. We calculated an average national price in June 2020. Although our analysis represents a snapshot in time, prices vary by region and season. It shows that at least for these items, the difference is often a dollar or less per unit, and simple strategies can help you save. Check the frozen and canned aisle. Frozen and canned organic vegetable versions are often less pricey than fresh, especially if you opt for store brands. Shop sales. When fresh organic produce goes on sale, the price can rival non-organic varieties. Compare unit prices. The price per pound, quart, or other individual measure is usually listed on the shelf below the food. If you compare prices, compare those, you might sometimes save by choosing packaged. For example, the national average price for loose organic apples was $1.95 a pound. But buy a 2-pound bag of organic apples for $3.76 or $1.88 per pound. Do the prep yourself. Lettuce in a plastic clamshell costs more than a head of lettuce, and a wedge of watermelon is more per pound than a whole one. Shop different varieties. For example, we averaged the prices for different varieties. The price for peaches, for example, included white and yellow types. But some varieties can be cheaper than others. During the first and last weeks of June 2020, organic Bartlett pears cost less than an organic Bosque. Stock up on deals. You can often freeze produce and use it later for baking, snacks, and more. For example, organic white nectarines were slightly cheaper than non-organic ones during the first 2 weeks of June. So that would have been a good time to buy more of them and then freeze them. And here's some listings. Apples, organic $1.95 per pound, non-organic $1.63 per pound. Blueberries, organic $3.57 a pint, non-organic $2.57 a pint. So that's a dollar difference. That's a pretty big difference. Celery, $2.10 a bunch for organic, $1.21 a bunch for non-organic. Cherries were $4.89 a pound versus $3.44 a pound for non-organic. Nectarines, $2.54 a pound and $1.95 a pound for non-organic. Peaches, $2.54 a pound, $1.64 a pound. Pears, $1.82 a pound, $1.39 a pound for non-organic. Strawberries were $3.12 a pound for organic, $2.23 a pound for non-organic. Watermelons, seedless, mini, $4.39 for organic, $3.03 for non-organic. Potatoes, $3.38, 3-pound bag, $2.47 for a 3-pound bag for non-organic. Green beans were $3.59 a pound. Non-organic were $1.61 a pound. Kale was $1.70 a bunch, but who cares about that? Just kidding. $1.18 a bunch for non-organic. Lettuce was $2.26 a head or $1.29 a head for non-organic. And summer squash was $1.97 a pound or $1.27 a pound. I don't know about you, but I have to disagree with them. That's a pretty significant difference if you're buying a lot of groceries for your family. So you got to really be careful, I think. The right way to wash. You can't wash away all pesticides. The chemicals that stick to soft skin, wax coatings can trap certain pesticides, and some are systemic, meaning they get into the flesh of fruits or vegetables. In fact, the USDA pesticide tasting, on which we based our ratings, occurs after potash is washed, and if appropriately peeled, yet some have a pesticide residue. To remove as much pesticide residue as you can, follow this method used by the USDA. Wash all produce, even those that will be peeled, in cold running water for 15 to 20 seconds. For hard produce with tough skins, like apples and potatoes, use the vegetable brush or scrub with your hands. You can time yourself by singing Happy Birthday song twice. That's good for washing your hands, too, by the way. Or any 20-second refrain of a favorite song. That's it. There's no evidence that special washes remove more pesticides. And you should certainly avoid soap, and especially bleach. Concerns about the ongoing coronavirus pandemic have led many people to think that using those cleaners and produce can help prevent the spread of the disease. But that's far more likely than likely that even after rinsing, soap or bleach left on the food can make you very sick. This next article is very pertinent, even though we seem to have reached a point where we're going to have a vaccine very soon. There's still a lot of stuff going on out there that's not good. Supplement schemes and COVID-19 come-ons. An investigation by CR shows how companies seeking to sell questionable products can take advantage of a wide-open internet marketplace and how difficult it is for regulators to stop them. This is particularly true since we are getting some word now that there may be a vaccine coming out pretty soon. You want to be very cautious. In mid-March, George Kipfel II, retired laboratory scientist from California, received an email with an ad urging him to buy an immunity oil to prevent him from getting the coronavirus sweeping the U.S. The 67-year-old says he had no doubt the claims were bogus and promptly deleted it. A day later, he got another email, then another, then one more, all hawking the same product as a way to stop the virus, a claim that's illegal in the eyes of federal regulators. And if you're over 55 and you've targeted more than this, just can't imagine how many emails we get. I'm always disappointed when someone tries to take advantage of tragedy to turn a profit, Kipfel says. Of course, the hucksters have a long history of separating people from their money by playing on their fears. But while snake oil salesmen of the past hawk their wares at circus sideshows or in the back of magazines, now they have the internet, where it's a quick and inexpensive to find millions of potential customers. An investigation by Consumer Reports shows how easy it is for ads touting dubious cures to reach huge numbers of consumers, and how complicated it is for overtaxed regulators to clamp down on the ads. Such ads have infested the Internet, according to the Better Business Bureau, as a growing number of companies have taken to the web to sell sketchy dietary supplements and other health aids. In many cases, these involve duping consumers into signing up for a free trial, only to find that they have been unwittingly enrolled in a costly auto-renewal subscription. But the damage to consumers is not just about money lost and the frustration of trying to get it back. It's also about the exposure to potentially unsafe products. Unlike pharmaceuticals, supplements don't have to be proved to be safe and effective before they're put up for sale. For regulators, it can be a struggle to weed out scammers, especially at a time when those agencies have been flooded with complaints. Every state's attorney general and the Federal Trade Commission is overwhelmed, says David Valdeck, a former director of the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection, and now a law professor at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. CR's investigation found that the businesses of moving the merchandise through robocalls and spam emails and text often relies on the help of numerous parties, marketeers, payment processors, suppliers, retailers, who allegedly work hand-in-hand and are structured in ways that insulate them from legal and financial backlash. The investigation included a review of hundreds of pages of corporate filings, court records, and documents obtained through public records requests, as well as interviews with the advocates, lawyers, and consumers. Justin Brookman, Director of Privacy and Technology Policy at CR and a former FTC official, says consumers often assume the online marketplace for supplements is well-regulated. In reality, consumer protection authorities are woefully understaffed and can pursue only a fraction of the scams, he says. And then the regulators have to peel back the layers to find out what's going on. Meanwhile, people keep getting ripped off. A window into a hidden world. Klipfel says the ad he received was similar to the ad cited in an April 1st cease and desist letter issued by the New York State Attorney General to a company called Finest Herbalist. The Attorney General's office wrote that it was extremely concerned about claims presenting one of the company's products, a blend of essential oils called Pure Herbal Tea Total Defense Immunity Blend, in emails, texts, and fake news stories as a cure for the coronavirus. Finalist Herbalist didn't respond to multiple requests for comment, and customer service representatives said they couldn't answer questions about the cease and desist letter. But CR, through an analysis of corporate documents and website code, found that Finest Herbalist is affiliated with a company called OfferSpace, one of a network of interconnected firms owned by Unified Funding, based in Wyoming. Unified's family of companies often work together to help clients launch an online business selling dietary supplements and other natural health products through the website, such as Finest Herbalist. These companies have been accused in lawsuits and Better Business Bureau complaints of sketchy marketing tactics to peddle unproven products and of allegedly roping customers into costly auto-renew subscriptions. Websites created for clients are given unique brand names, records show, which could complicate figuring out who exactly is behind a particularly online retail site. Indeed, it isn't clear whether Finest Herbalist is the name of a company or brand name subscribed to by Uniform's family of companies. The only information about Finest Herbalist listed on the letter issued by the New York Attorney General's office, which declined to comment, citing an ongoing investigation, is the post office box in Utah. CR attempted to contact multiple current and former employees and attorneys linked to Unify's family of companies, who either didn't respond or declined to comment. An attorney named Damon Wright ultimately did contact CR and passed along answers from OfferSpace to the CR's questions about that company as well as about United and its affiliated companies. These statements didn't directly confirm that Finest Herbalist was one of the companies cited in New York case, saying only that an unnamed client did receive a cease and desist letter. Any bogus marketing info related to Pure Herbal Total Defense Immunity Blend was the fault of the contractors paid to drive traffic to the website where the product was sold, one statement said, and swift action was taken to try to have the content removed from the web. Finest Herbalist and Unified Funding's family of companies are hardly unique. Hundreds of businesses probably have similar models. But New York's legal action, along with a lawsuit related to United's affiliated companies, provide a view into the complicated online world where alleged scammers operate. Unified subsidiaries together would function as a turnkey business opportunity for would-be supplement entrepreneurs. Marketing for their products in some cases appear to be tailored to the fad or crisis of the moment. For example, while it's unclear exactly when Pure Herbal Total Defense Immunity Blend was introduced, when the coronavirus outbreak began, some of the products had preyed on consumers concerned about the virus, which is, of course, typical. The products are marketed through third-party contractors who use ever-shifting mix of robocalls, spam, and social media ads that, according to lawsuits, include phony celebrity endorsements and literally fake names and literal fake news. While the world is waiting for a vaccine, one mom has found a solution to fight back against the coronavirus outbreak, says a headline of a fake news article about Pure Herbal Total Defense Immunity Blend, made to look like it had run on Fox News. Despite the warning from New York Top's law enforcement official, CR found two similar phony articles online in June. The ads were not authorized, according to a statement passed along by Attorney Wright. But while companies may blame contractors for bogus ads, the FTC says it has brought legal action against other companies, alleging that they're responsible for the actions of third-party marketeers who work on their behalf. A complicated web. Last December, Joan Stone of Ontario, Canada, saw a Facebook ad promoting one of those products, an oil sold by a company called First Class Herbalist CBD, and decided to click through. It sounded like it could help my husband, she says. As long as she covered shipping, it was free. Of course, says, they get you that way. What Stone 62 didn't realize was she stumbled onto the complicated world of Unified Funding. Unified says it helped process consumer transactions worth $69 million in 2019. The company claims to have amassed a database of information on over 1 million customers. Much of the company's revenue appears to come from OfferSpace and two other subsidiaries it acquired last year, Traffic Space and Real Oil. Unified's co-founder, Ryan Hogan, and a handful of others have roles across these subsidiaries, all sharing an address in an American Fork, Utah. These subsidiaries are involved in the part of Unified's business that helps client companies sell supplements and other natural products online. OfferSpace, of which Hogan is a former president, manages clients' websites and customer service. Once a client website is ready, TrafficSpace, who whose restricted registered corporate agent is the Christopher Armstrong, also an executive at OfferSpace, handles marketing mostly by farming it out to third-party agencies. Real Oil, where Hogan was once president and partner, and Armstrong was a principal, manages the client's supplies and fulfills customers' orders. The connections get naughtier still. Unified also has a majority stake in a company that owns Desert Lake Group, an online retail company that records show sold products by contracting a client of OfferSpace, Real Oil, and TrafficSpace. Armstrong and Hogan were former managers of Desert Lake, whose registered agent is Darren Toon, himself once president of OfferSpace and TrafficSpace. Records show Desert Lake operated out of the same American Fork address. Desert Lake is also affiliated with a man named Jared Forbush. The FTC issued a warning last year to Forbush Holdings, a different company owned by Forbush, for allegedly making exaggerated product claims, according to government records. Desert Lake paid Forbush a monthly commission for unspecified work, records show, and in early April, Forbush and Desert Lake merged. As a client of Unified's family of businesses, Desert Lake sold products through websites with unique brand names, records suggest. Multiple plaintiffs have alleged that one such affiliated with Desert Lake was First Class Herbalist CBD, the website from which Stone tried to buy her product. If the corporate structure source complicated, of course, sounds complicated, it is, and it may be intentionally so, experts and plaintiffs' attorneys say. It's a shell game, says Joe P. Lineski, an attorney representing the Arkansas Consumer, who claims one of the group's affiliated companies illegally texted him ads for natural products. It's a deliberate attempt to mask their business identities and protect themselves from liability. That the companies are separate legal entities can make it hard for consumers seeking refunds. It creates some degree of plausible deniability, says CR's Justin Brookman. At the very least, these complicated company corporate structures can slow regulators, reporters, or consumers just trying to figure out what's going on. When reached by a reporter, Toon said to call back, but later calls from CR went straight to voicemail. When CR reached him from a different phone number, Toon said, "I have no comment on anything," before hanging up. Hogan, Armstrong, and Forbush did not respond to requests for comment. Shut down these companies. Tracing the lineage of the CBD product Stone tried to buy illustrates how complex corporate relationships can result in practices that allegedly harm consumers while also shielding companies from liability. Stone says she never received the CBD oil she'd ordered. Instead, her credit card was billed $89.99 for what seems to be an authentic refill plan that she says she unknowingly enrolled in. She was also assessed multiple bogus charges ranging from $7 to $10 from vendors she's never heard of, she says. Eventually, Stone had to cancel her Visa card to stop the billing. She kept trying to reach a helpful ear in customer service but got nowhere until February when she says she received checks in the mail from another company she never heard of, First Class USA. That's another name for Natural Brands USA, which, no surprise, is a subsidiary of Unified, according to records filed in May with the Canadian Securities Exchange. The statements passed along by Wright deny that United owns First Class USA, contradicting what the documents say. The checks were ostensibly meant to be partial refund from the charges, but Stone says has no place to cash them. The memo line for each says, FirstClassHerbalStructure.com, a website she's never went to. These companies, Stone says, need to be shut down. The type of advertising Stone encountered is known as affiliate marketing, a business model in which a company pays a contractor who brings customers to its website. For example, in late June, affiliate marketers were being offered $95 per sale if they delivered a customer for the Pure Herbal Tool Defense Immunity Blend Essential Oil, the product cited by New York Attorney General. Affiliate marketers typically don't use traditional ads, but instead create content on social media and in emails, text, and more on that link to websites where purchases can be made. The model is legal, but the commission incentive contract less than savory contractors who use unseemly tactics to promote products, says John Levine, president of the Coalition Against Unsolicited Commercial Email, a nonprofit agency group. Coming by a list of consumers or targets seem easy. One site CR reviewed offered a database of 180 million email addresses for just under $200. To many, affiliate marketers do minimal due diligence in who they sign up, Levine says, and the person sending the content often only has the most tenuous relationship with the thing he's promoting. Traffic Space, the marketing firm known by Unified, uses affiliate marketers but also monitors online ads to ensure that they don't make inappropriate claims, according to a statement passed along by Wright. But lawsuits filed in California and Utah suggest otherwise. 11 Fort Climates of Traffic Space, Offer Space, and Real Oil allege that the companies rely on affiliate marketers who use fake celebrity endorsements, fake news, exaggerated results, and similar deceptive advertising tactics to drive traffic to their websites, potentially exposing them to regulatory action. A statement passed along by Attorney Wright denied the claims and said the plaintiffs are former disgruntled clients who wanted to avoid paying for services rendered. Lawsuits, previous reports, and government records allege that the companies have been linked to bogus advertising that claimed their clients' products were endorsed by the popular TV show Shark Tank and the Dr. Oz show. Jamie Richardson from Dallas, Texas, just netted one of the biggest deals in Shark Tank history, one ad said. Mehmet Oz, or MD, of the Dr. Oz show, told CR he has tried for years to shut down such bogus ads, and he called on companies such as Facebook and Google to take responsibility for what they display to consumers. A Shark Tank representative didn't respond to requests for comment. A statement passed along by Wright says that the company takes due diligence measures to ensure that its clients do not use those sorts of ads. Spam galore. While Gene Stone was lured by an ad on social media, other consumers said they were inundated with unsolicited messages with links to products on websites affiliated with Unified through its subsidiaries. Patricia Wheatley, a 64-year-old Texas resident, received a text from an unknown number in January containing a link to a website to buy CBD gummies. I just got one of those yesterday. Something she says she doesn't use. Screenshots on the website showed a warning of a limited supply due to high media demand. Wheatley, who enrolled in Do Not Call Registry in 2007, tried running down who was behind the text, but it wasn't easy. She sent one email to customer service on March 2nd, writing, "I'm hoping we can resolve this in a civilized manner ASAP." She attached a letter detailing what she saw as a violation of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which created the Do Not Call Registry, including screenshots of the text she'd received. After a month of silence, a second attempt on April 2nd generated an automated response that said she'd receive more information shortly. "I want your legal counsel to contact me," she responded. The message appears to have gotten someone's attention. In late April, she received an email from an attorney representing Desert Lake Group, the retail company affiliated with Unified. Wheatley, though, had no idea what will happen next. "I can't stand this company," Wheatley says. Unified subsidiaries allegedly operate in other ways that harm consumers, too. According to lawsuits, for example, websites created for clients sometimes include incorrect email addresses. One complaint says, so consumers who try to contact customer service have emails bounce back. Indeed, in interviews with CR and complaints to the Better Business Bureau, numerous consumers described difficulty reaching customer service for websites associated with Unified's family of companies. A statement passed along by Attorney Wright says that Desert Lake's alleged conduct was due to rogue affiliate marketers, not the company itself, of course. $3 million lost. Consumers aren't the only ones alleging that they were fleeced by United subsidiaries. According to lawsuits filed by 11 former clients, Offer Space, Traffic Space, and Real Oil scammed them out of at least $3 million. They also allege that the companies misappropriated consumer data and in turn spammed consumers with ads for their own and third-party products. When former clients conducted test buys of their own products in March 2019, one of the email accounts they used received at least 230 emails marketing other related products, one lawsuit alleges. The client losses allege that charges for product consumer purchased on website handled for them by OfferSpace were credited to bank accounts linked to the defendants. That allegations fits the description of credit card laundering. According to the FTC, merchants engage in laundering to hide their true identity from consumers, the acquirer, and the card networks and law enforcement. Last spring, CR conducted test buy of its own, purchasing two bottles of Total Defense Immunity Blend from Nature's Exclusive CBD, a brand that Unified's funding recently sold. The wrong product was delivered, and trying to track down anyone to complain was difficult. The charge showed up as having been processed by a company called Dynamis Keto, which lists another company, Red Rock Sale LLC, as the point of contact. That company, it turns out, was incorporated in March by an individual a few doors down from an address previously affiliated with Unified's co-founder, Ryan Hogan. No one answered repeated calls to customer service. When CR did reach a phone number connected to Red Rock Cell, the person answering said it was a wrong number. A statement passed along by Wright didn't explain why the order was processed this way, but said that the location of Red Rock Cell appears to be a coincidence. Going broke. Despite the many allegations against Unified's family of companies, corporate records indicate that the company itself is doing just fine. In January, Unified brokered a deal with Canada-based Moda Ventures to buy one of the brands, Nature's Exclusive, in a deal valued at $32 million. Soon after, Moda, which didn't respond to multiple requests for comment, named Hogan its CEO. In June, Moda said it would acquire all of Unified's, including office space, traffic space, and real oil, and the company that owns Desert Lake, for a deal valued at $45 million. Moda changed its name to Thoughtful Brands Incorporated in August. Yet in April, Desert Lake Group filed for bankruptcy, citing dozens of consumer claims for violating robocall laws. The potential damages are so high, the company said in a filing, that it needs bankruptcy to pay bills. That prior to filing, records show that Desert Lake's registered agent, Tone, incorporated DLGH, which is now the sole owner of Desert Lake Group. Later in June, Offer Space and Traffic Space told a judge during a court hearing in an alleged fraud case against them that they'll have to close up shop if forced to repay a former client almost $1 million demanded. And just months after Finest Herbalist was cited in New York for allegedly marketing a product as a coronavirus cure, Offer Space and Traffic Space said that the pandemic has hurt business. The damage is so bad, in fact, that they say they needed to apply for and were granted federal assistance to the Federal Payroll Protection Program, which was started to help companies harmed by the coronavirus's pandemic. CR's Justin Brookman noted the irony. It would certainly be galling if a company allegedly profiting from fake coronavirus cures was being propped up by government aid meant to offset damage the virus has done to the economy. Beware of these common scams. While online solicitations pitching broke cures and treatment for COVID-19 are rife right now, the pandemic has set in motion any other types of scams, including these. Financial fraud. Scammers may try to hook you into giving information that they can use to set up financial accounts in your name. Be wary of coronavirus-themed phishing emails and phone calls touting work-at-home schemes or offering help getting unemployment assistance. And watch out for any email that ask you to provide credentials, such as account numbers, passwords, or logins, that can be used to impersonate your identity, create new bank or credit card accounts, or access existing ones. And I will add an addendum to that, personal experience. You'll often get emails from purporting to be from Apple, purporting to be from Amazon, purporting to be from Exxon, purporting to be from Capital Bank, all of these things asking you, saying your account has been frozen, asking you to provide information. Don't. Unsafe e-shopping. During the pandemic, more and more people are shopping online. That means long-existing schemes to steal consumer information from online retailers are becoming a bigger problem. Small business websites are especially risky right now. Local grocers, cafes, and shops that hastily set up to do e-commerce might not have adequate protections to safeguard your credit card or other alternatives or other information. Other shopping schemes to watch out for: exorbitantly priced masks and sellers, the print here is very poor, or sellers claiming to have products such as hand sanitizers that are in demand but hard to come by. You place an order, but it's not delivered. Predatory robocallers. Robocall scammers are also preying on people's fears about the pandemic. Schemes into telemarketers offering free testing kits, but asking for credit card information and charging high prices for shipping. And HVAC cleaning services that vendors falsely claim to protect you. Consumer advocates say fake debt collecting robocalls asking for sensitive personal information or payment on debts you don't owe are likely to rise, given the high employment rate and economic instability. Fake charities. Scammers are also ready to take advantage of generosity during the pandemic. They may reach you by email, mail, or a phone call using names that sound like real charities and ask you to donate by wiring money. Healthcare schemes. Medical scams can take a number of forms. Some alleged fraudsters go door to door or call offering free medical services such as in-home COVID-19 test kits and appointments for future COVID-19 vaccinations, claiming to represent the government agency. a public health agency, or an insurance company, they may request additional information such as insurance numbers, Medicare IDs, and credit card information. They may even suggest that you've been exposed to the coronavirus and that your personal information is needed for public health purposes. Once a scammer has obtained your medical information, it can be used to impersonate you to obtain medical care for themselves or others, to bill for fraudulent medical goods or services, and to commit new other types of identity theft. Puppy scams. Scammers are also taking advantage of animal lovers during quarantine. Many consumers turn to the internet to look for a pet, only to find out too late that the animals they paid for do not exist. Though pet buying scams have long existed, the pandemic promises new opportunities to tack on special fees or make excuses about the way the pet could not be seen in person before would-be pet owners figured out they have been conned. Some scams are obvious. You're asked to send cash or contacted out of the blue with an offer that sounds too good to be true. But bad actors work hard to fool consumers, and scams are widespread. A nationally representative June 2020 Consumer Report survey of 1,000 adults found that with the coronavirus epidemic in March, 35% of Americans said they paid for or saw something they thought was a scam, or saw something claimed to cure or treat COVID-19. They use scare tactics. Scammers often pretend to work for the government agencies such as the IRS or Social Security Administration and use threats of fines or suspension of Social Security benefits to get you to comply. The attachment or links look odd. Unsolicited emails and texts often come with links or attachments that contain malware, which can damage your computer or provide access to personal data on your device. Examine the link before you click on it. Hover your mouse over to reveal the full address. An ending of RU, for example, means the site was registered in Russia, or there are lots of scams originate. And don't open attachments and emails you're not expecting. The site address has misspellings. This is another tip off to a fake website. Hover your mouse over the URL so you can see the full address, and if it seems off or wrong somehow, take that as a sign not to trust it. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's broadcast of episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.